You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hanat Baba. The history of home ownership in the U.S. is a complicated one, but a look at that history can help shed light on why today's housing economy is the way it is, especially if you go back to post-World War II America. The new film, Owned, A Tale of Two Americas, explores the overtly racist housing policies of the mid-20th century that led to two contrasting realities, white middle-class suburban life and Black and Latino segregation and disenfranchisement. The film plays tonight at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco as part of the San Francisco Documentary Festival. Director Giorgio Angelini joined me in studio to talk about the post-war policies that shaped what housing would look like for generations to come.
So post-war housing, you've got millions of veterans coming back home from the war, and there's a huge housing shortage. And you also got this massive war machine that was building boats and planes and just all the war machinery that are now basically turned off. Mm-hmm. But we still had all this capability. So the idea was that, well, why don't we use that sort of know-how and do it into fabricating homes? William Levitt was an enterprising developer there, and he decided to sort of create this huge, the first tract home project there, and called it Levittown.
So that was the first suburb?
I mean, in the first post-war suburb, where you sort of had this confluence also, the other important factor, which was that the government created through the GI Bill a huge subsidy for people to come out and buy homes basically with interest-free mortgages with very little money down. And on the other side, they were also facilitating financing for the developers themselves. So it was a huge, heavy hand of the government that created this kind of housing.
So returning GIs, what would they get access to?
They would get access to sub-market loans with, you know, very little money down, if not
like nothing. $100 in some
exactly.
cases?
Yeah, exactly.
And was this everyone? All the GIs?
Well, as I started doing my research there, there was a really striking moment touring the town with Jimmy Silvestri. He's a retired New York, Nassau County police officer. And he's giving me a tour around talking about how great the city is and how it's the backbone of America and the blue-collar American dream, which it is. But as we turn this corner, he kind of wistfully, solemnly looks out in the distance and says, as great as Levittown is, there's just one thing wrong.
The only thing that Levitt did that was wrong, and I'll be the first one to admit this, no blacks allowed. No blacks allowed. And that is disgraceful.
No blacks allowed. And there was just a hush in the car, and it was so profound.
If I'm fighting alongside a black man who's willing to die for his country, and he can't buy a house next to me in Levittown, I'm sorry, man, that don't make any sense to me.
And I don't know, it was like, once I heard him say that, you could feel that sort of guilt very palpably in all of his friends, because they all have... Well, again, another discovery that was really interesting for me was that all of them had a very similar story. Hmm. They all came from neighborhoods that we now consider to be historically black neighborhoods in New York, which were not the case. They were living in Bed-Stuy, South Bronx, Brownsville. They were all very integrated neighborhoods before the war. And then after the war, and once the GI Bill kicked in, all these white families were plucked out of these neighborhoods and taken out to the suburbs. And so Jimmy's story really, in many ways, is a story of an unfortunate story of America and how concentration of poverty and segregation and housing really took place.
So was it that the developments accepted no blacks, or was it the GI Bill, or was it both? Where did that happen?
It was through a combination of things. I mean, there was racially exclusive covenants. There were zoning laws. There was redlining. But it was, you know, most famously redlining, which basically meant that the government would insure loans in certain areas and not in others. And so it was all based on this perception, basically, that having black families in your neighborhood would bring values down. And so the government trying to sort of spur this homeownership society and creating a middle class through homeownership inherently wanted to sort of retain values. So they bought into this ideology that was obviously very racist, and it sort of extrapolated in a thousand different terrible ways.
What is probably a surprise to a lot of people is that redlining is created by the federal government.
Michael, what's redlining?
That's when the white bankers draw red lines around black areas and don't give up no green.
The bank turned down our loan. They said I'm a bad risk.
Why would they say that?
Banks take up that same practice. They decide they're not going to lend in those areas.
That meant that all these benefits that were flowing to potential homeowners were flowing to whites and not flowing to minorities. It baked this element of racism into our homeownership culture.
It ain't their problem, it's our problem. These people are stepping up in life and we're moving down. How much do you think our property's gonna be worth with them living two doors away?
That's a clip from the film Owned, A Tale of Two Americas. With me is filmmaker Giorgio Angelini. And in that clip also, we heard from Nicole Hannah Jones, New York Times journalist, on redlining. Do you find that you were surprised by this history?
Absolutely, just how overt it was, but even more surprised how little we really understand about it. And so we have a history here that is really misunderstood. And if we don't really reckon with the fact that certain people got to certain places for particularly nasty reasons, you know, you're never going to look at what progress means in the right way. Because, I don't know, to deviate slightly, I think, interestingly, you know, the Archie Bunker clip, looking back on it now, he sounds a lot like, you know, a typical Donald Trump supporter today, I would say. You know, he sees himself as the victim of integration. You know, black people are moving up in the world, he says, and I'm struggling.
Housing is affecting all aspects of life right now in San Francisco. We have a housing crisis. Do you see any parallels to any of the places that you studied in the film in terms of demographics as well? San Francisco and Oakland losing a lot of black families and black people moving outwards, gentrification.
For sure. I mean, I think what's interesting about San Francisco is that these same issues that you know, people of color have been dealing with for many years is now happening to middle-class white people in San Francisco. And I think that is something very interesting. And you know, I think that the thing that's unique about San Francisco, again, like I mentioned, is just that, just the physical barriers of it. And so there, then it becomes like a government issue about how to handle that on a zoning and like building policy level.
What do you want people to get out of the film?
People will inherently want to feel defensive when they watch this film, some people. And I feel like I want people to really think hard about how it is they got to where they are and what they can do to ameliorate these problems today.
Why did you select Levittown to live?
We were looking for a place to buy a home. We looked at Levittown, and we liked the homes here. We liked the advantages that Levittown seemed to offer in comparison to other cities. And we understood that it was going to be all white, and we were very happy to buy a home here.